government. This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Israeli military spokesman Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari said on Wednesday that Israeli forces had achieved tactical control over the Philadelphia corridor that runs along the border between the Gaza Strip and Egypt. He said the corridor served as a regular smuggling pipeline for Hamas. Other military officials said the Israeli military's operation in the Rafah area has in 10 days discovered 20 tunnels that cross into Egypt, and this information was passed on to Egypt. An American drone is reportedly grounded in Yemen. AP correspondent Charles Deladesma reports.
Another U.S. military MQ-9 Reaper drone has gone down in Yemen. That's according to images posted online on Wednesday. It wasn't immediately clear what brought down the drone, but the military's central command has acknowledged seeing reports of the aircraft being downed in a desert region of Yemen's central Marib province. The downing comes as Yemen's Houthi rebels continue their attacks on shipping around the Red Sea over the Israel-Hamas war. Authorities in Marib, which remains held by allies of Yemen's exiled government, did not immediately acknowledge the drone, nor did the Houthi, who previously have shot down MQ-9s amid the war. I'm Charles Deladesma.
The Houthis and Hamas are U.S.-designated terrorist groups. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Wednesday that Russia was still trying to disrupt next month's World Peace Summit devoted to the conflict with Russia and was putting pressure on countries to stay away from the gathering. Zelensky wants the summit to produce a front to exert pressure on Russia and advance its peace formula, which calls for the withdrawal of Russian troops and the restoration of Ukraine's 1991 borders. The summit is scheduled to be held in Switzerland from June 15th through the 16th. This is VOA News. Jurors in Donald Trump's hush money trial finished their first day of closed-door deliberations on Wednesday without reaching a verdict that would decide the fate of the only U.S. president to be charged with a crime. Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston reports.
Trump is charged with falsifying business documents to cover up a hush money payment to porn star Stormy Daniels shortly before the 2016 presidential election. He has pleaded not guilty and denies wrongdoing. Justice Juan Merchan instructed the 12 jurors and six alternates not to rely solely on the testimony of star witness Michael Cohen, who said he paid $130,000 out of his own pocket to prevent Daniels from telling voters about an alleged sexual encounter with Trump. Cohen said Trump approved the payoff. Any verdict requires unanimous agreement by all jurors, and the judge will declare a mistrial if they are unable to all agree.
That was Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston. Wednesday was the last day of campaigning before Sunday's historic nationwide election in Mexico. The two leading candidates for the presidency are both women, with former Mexico City Mayor Claudia Sheinbaum facing off against former senator and tech entrepreneur Xochitl Galvez. The last days of the national campaign have been overshadowed by violence. A mayoral candidate in the western state of Jalisco was shot multiple times by intruders in his home, while two of his campaign staff were also wounded. Gunmen killed an alternate mayoral candidate in Morelos State, just south of Mexico City. A volcano in southwestern Iceland is erupting again, spewing red streams of lava and triggering the evacuation of the popular Blue Lagoon geothermal spa. Here's AP correspondent Haya Punjwani.
The eruption occurred in an area north of Grindavik, a coastal town of 3,800 people that was largely evacuated after a December eruption that ended centuries of dormancy. Iceland sits above a volcanic hotspot in the North Atlantic and sees regular eruptions and is experienced at dealing with them. The Icelandic Meteorological Office said, although activity began to calm down by early evening, the eruption was estimated to be the area's most vigorous so far, with lava shooting 165 feet into the sky from a fissure that grew to 2 miles in length. Anyone still in town was ordered to leave. I'm Haya Punjwani.
Issues in the News is VOA's premier news discussion program. We take on the biggest stories of the week and discuss them in detail with those who have unparalleled expertise. Our in-depth analysis goes beyond the headlines, providing you with the inside story on both domestic and international news. Stay informed and engaged with the latest developments as we explore the most pressing issues shaping our world. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Counting is underway in pivotal South African election.
We are a democratic state at the present moment, but our own is the oppressors now, those which we're putting into power.
The East African community halts its activities over a financial crisis. Uganda University students petition Parliament over the East African crude oil pipeline project. We'll take you to the African Development Bank's annual meeting in Nairobi. An analyst said West African leaders should do more to prevent constitutional changes to stay in power.
We have not seen the leaders of ECOWAS trying to do something, use their forceful leadership in order to prevent these constitutional changes in several countries. These are the things that are happening in Africa.
And jurors are deliberating in a criminal case against U.S. presidential candidates and former President Donald Trump. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Voter turnout appeared to be high on Wednesday in South Africa's elections that could prove to be the most pivotal since the end of apartheid. As Kate Bartlett reports, people were still in line to cast their ballots as polls officially closed at 9 p.m. local time.
They came out in numbers. People of all the Rainbow Nation's different races, young and old, in leafy, affluent suburbs and impoverished townships. So keen were South Africans to exert their democratic right that polling stations were allowing people already in line to cast their ballots after the official closing time of 9 p.m. on Wednesday night. The country's Electoral Commission chief, Sy Mamabolo, told media that while he couldn't give an official figure yet, it looked like turnout had surpassed that of the last elections.
It's difficult to call until you complete the counting process. Suffice to say, it will probably be well beyond what we had, the 66% we had in 2019.
This could bode ill for the governing African National Congress, or ANC. Political commentator Tessa Dooms told VOA earlier that turnout would be key.
People have been asking me what my prediction is for this election, and I keep saying the predictions are going to be very difficult the more people show up. And I think voter turnout is the biggest predictor of how this election is going to go.
For months ahead of elections, opinion polls widely predicted the ANC would get less than 50% for the first time since it won the first democratic elections in 1994, bringing an end to white rule. However, some polls showed the ANC, which was campaigning heavily, gaining ground as election day approached, and President Cyril Ramaphosa said he was confident as he cast his ballot in Johannesburg earlier Wednesday.
And I have no doubt whatsoever in my heart of hearts that the people will once again invest confidence in the African National Congress to continue to lead this country.
Many voters told VOA they were angry with the government's failure to provide basic services, frequent power cuts, high unemployment rates, and political corruption scandals. 59-year-old voter Charles Burmum, who is unemployed and lives in one of Johannesburg's poorest areas, told VOA his elation at voting in the first election in 1994 has now turned to disappointment.
For the first time, I was very excited, and I was so happy. So that our country is taking a step ahead between the previous governments that was the oppressors of the apartheid. Now we are moving into a democratic state. So now the downfall now. We are a democratic state at the present moment, but our own is the oppressors now, those which we're putting into power.
Electoral officials said the vote went smoothly for the most part, aside from a few glitches and many voters experiencing long waiting times. Counting now begins, with results expected over the next few days. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Reporter Yazin Kamadian also observed elections yesterday in Cape Town and has this report.
Voters in Cape Town lined up to vote with hopes that this time around things will be better. The outcome of this election will determine who the country's president would be, as well as which political parties make it to the National Assembly. The ruling African National Congress is expected to lose some seats to smaller political parties.
I'll be voting for the first time today, and I feel amazing because I'll have a say in this country.
It's important to vote because you can't complain about something if you're not voting.
30 years of democracy, we don't have any representation as the youth. We can't necessarily locate ourselves in any of the parties that we see. And for most of us, I think today is we're not voting because we believe in any of the political parties and the fact that they're going to bring change, but we're voting. For some of us, it's also like a form of like political activism, coming inside and just picking any party, but also having a very strong stance of the parties that we're not going to vote for.
I think that it's been some positives, a lot of negatives, as one would expect for any democracy. I think that things could have gone better in some respects.
It's changing, eh? Democracy changes. It's a fluid concept, so it's growing. So as 30 years, it's going to change. But so far, it's okay. It needs change.
For Voice of America, I'm Yazid Kamaldin in Cape Town, South Africa.
An analyst says leaders of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, should do more to prevent constitutional changes by leaders to stay in power. This week, the Party of Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara said it will be asking him to seek another term. Ouattara has yet to say whether he will run for a fourth term. Nyaka Lagoke is Assistant Professor of History and Pan-African Studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. He tells me that if President Ouattara seeks another term, it could violate Ivory Coast Constitution.
I don't think many people are surprised in Ivory Coast because the current president, Mr. Ouattara, said several times that if Babalola runs, he's going to run, even though Babalola is prevented by the law, according to Mr. Ouattara's party, to run again for president because he was accused for having attacked, you know, the West African Bank. Now, Mr. Ouattara himself, we know the constitution was changed, and then he still wants to run. So we are not surprised. We are waiting on Mr. Ouattara to confirm that his intention is not to run for president.
As you said, it's not clear yet whether President Ouattara is going to accept to run again. Let's assume he decides. Would that be in violation of the Ivory Coast Constitution?
I think there is no, in Ivory Coast, since Mr. Ouattara decided to run for president and since he became the president of Ivory Coast in 2011, we don't talk too much about the law in Ivory Coast. Mr. Ouattara's intention and desires are the law of the land. So even when the constitution was changed for him to run, you know, there was a debate that it was against the constitution, but he did it anyway. Myself, I think that there should be a generational renewal of political leadership in Ivory Coast. That's my position. But I would think that, you know, he has a point to prove. Matt Ouattara wants to show that he can still be there. Didier, who was the former president who came right after Oufou-Boigny died 2 years ago, if Didier was alive, there is a strong possibility that he was going to run too. So Didier in his 90s. Ouattara in his early 80s, Gbagbo is going to be 80. And then those three leaders have been involved like in the tragedy of Ivory Coast since 1990. And then they still think that they are the indispensable people in the country. So that is also part of the problem that we are dealing with in Ivory Coast.
Put this in the context of the West Africa situation where you have military coup in Guinea-Conakry, Mali, Burkina Faso. What does that mean? Because if you listen to what the military leaders are saying, particularly in Guinea, they were citing the constitution being violated.
We have not seen the leaders of ECOWAS trying to do something, use their forceful leadership in order to prevent the constitutional changes in several countries. These are the things that are happening in Africa. So if we cannot try to resolve those issues one way or the other, and then people think that this is another form of coup d'etat, which gives the right to the soldiers to do military coup d'etat. That is my position on that issue. I'm not saying that there should be coup d'etat everywhere.
Nyaka Lagoke is Assistant Professor of History and Pan-Africana Studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. He was speaking with us from Dakar, Senegal. listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 30th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The East African Legislative Assembly on Wednesday announced that its activities have been suspended due to a lack of funds. The announcement comes after the East African Court of Justice canceled its June session due to delay in contributions from partner states. Moses Javier Rimana reports.
The East African community is facing a financial crisis that has paralyzed the activities of the organs and institutions. During the 17th meeting of the Bureau of the East African Community Speakers of Parliament that took place in Nairobi on Wednesday, the Speaker of the East African Legislative Assembly, Joseph Nakirutimana, said that regional assembly meetings have been called off. VOA exclusively obtained access to a document dated May 17, 2024, that details the EAC's financial problems. It showed that Democratic Republic of Congo remains the biggest defaulter, owing community $14.7 million. The DRC is yet to pay a single penny since joining the community 2 years ago, despite the obligation of partner states to pay their annual contribution before December of each financial year. George Odong is a regional lawmaker from Uganda.
We are really in a very dire situation as the East African community. We are also concerned that the community has a treaty, and that treaty provides for sanctions for non-compliance. Financing of the community is a treaty matter, and therefore those partner states that have been non-compliant are supposed to be subjected to sanctions. Unfortunately, we have not had any set precedent on sanctions, and this has, in my view, promoted a culture of non-compliance.
Article 146 of the Treaty Establishing the East African Community indicates that the summit may suspend a member state from taking part in the activities of the community if it fails to observe and fulfill the fundamental principles and objectives of the treaty. That includes the failure to meet the financial commitments to the EAC within a period of 18 months. Kennedy Kalonzo is an East African Legislative Assembly member from Kenya.
There is a need for the partner states to agree on the percentage of their GDP, and then this will solve all these funding issues, because currently over 50% of the EAC budget is donor reliant.
The East African Community partner states pay an equal amount of funds to the community, which represents almost 50% of the EAC budget. Every financial year, partner states contribute $7.3 million each to fund the EAC activities. The outstanding arrears from the partner states stands at $39.8 million. With the current financial crisis, the activities of the East African Court of Justice and the Regional Assembly will remain on hold indefinitely. Moses Avyarimana for Voice of America.
One of the main issues being discussed at the African Development Bank's annual meeting in Nairobi, Kenya, is restructuring global financial institutions to give Africa better terms for resolving debt and tackling the negative impact of COVID-19 and climate shocks. On the line to Nairobi, VOA Somali Service reporter Harun Maruf spoke to Somalia's finance minister, Bihi Ima Ega, and asked him about Africa's position on the debate.
The question on restructuring international financial architecture has been discussed over the last few years during the annual meetings. So mainly the developing world actually consider those institutions and the international financial architecture as unjust and uninclusive. So their demand was a more inclusive, more equitable, more unjust and fair international financial architecture, particularly at this critical, you know, time where geopolitical tension is and the, you know, ensuing climatic crisis have worsened African economies and developing world economies. So issues related to debt resolution is paramount in these discussions. As you know, since the onset of the COVID-19, debt levels in most African countries has become unsustainable. The cost of debt servicing has also increased. This has actually created, you know, fiscal imbalances in those African economies. So the African countries are demanding a fair treatment in terms of risk rating in African markets, compared to the counterparties like the European markets and the American markets. So they need their voice and their agenda to be central to the decision making. They need equitable access to international resources and finance so that they can mitigate, you know, those global challenges. They are also demanding during crises, particularly natural disasters, that countries who actually face these disasters should be suspended from continuing the servicing so that they can cope with those international crises.
And has any progress been made? Is Africa close to coming to an agreement with the world financial institutions?
As you know, there are ongoing reforms in the IMF as well as the World Bank. Particularly, the World Bank has actually embarked on what they call evolution roadmap that looks into addressing those, you know, concerns from the developing countries, introducing innovative financing instruments, as well as also embracing the idea of suspending, you know, debt servicing in times of crisis. Also leveraging the private sector capital to address, you know, those international crises. And more importantly, creating synergies between the IMF, the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and other sister, you know, continental banks.
Somalia's Finance Minister Bihi Ima Ega was speaking from Nairobi, Kenya, with Harun Maruf of VOA Somali Language Service. Ugandan university students have petitioned parliament over the East African Crude Oil Pipeline ECARB project. ECARB is an 897-mile crude oil export pipeline system that will be constructed to transport crude oil from Uganda to a maritime port facility in Tanzania. Douglas Umpuga reports.
A section of students from several universities under their Students Against ECOP Uganda grouping on Wednesday petitioned the Speaker of Parliament, Anita Among, according to local media. The students in their petition asked the House to prioritize and discuss environmental issues being raised on the negative impact of the crude oil pipeline. Student leaders were escorted to deliver their petition to the Parliament after a brief scuffle with the police. This was the first time the students had been escorted to submit their petition to Parliament. Previous attempts have failed as police have been arresting them from outside the Parliament. In their petition, the students say the construction of the heated pipeline from Hoima to Tanga in Tanzania poses existential consequences to most of the region's natural resources, especially Lake Victoria, where a third of it passes forests and rivers. Deacons Kamugisha is the executive director of the Kampala-based African Institute for Energy Governance. He says other environmentalists have raised similar issues.
We are still organizing communities to ensure that they reject any attempts by investors of the ECOP to allow that pipeline to pass in the water catchment of Lake Victoria, to allow the oil activities in the Machon Falls National Park. So the communities are still resisting those attempts. We are still mobilizing financial institutions and the insurance companies not to fund the project. And indeed, many of the banks and insurance companies are still saying no. But of course, you still have Total and the government of Uganda still pushing. We've seen a number of decisions being made, but we still hope that our efforts are going to ensure that this project does not destroy our people and it does not destroy our critical biodiversity.
The petition by students comes about 6 months after the East African Court of Justice dismissed a case that had been filed by civil society organizations opposing the construction of the pipeline. Like the students' arguments, the activists in their 2020 lawsuit informed the East African Court that the project will harm fragile ecosystems in areas rich in biodiversity, as well as the livelihoods of tens of thousands of local people. The project is being constructed by four partners, including Total Energies, China National Offshore Oil Company, and the governments of Uganda and Tanzania. The Uganda government and oil companies have on several occasions denied harassing locals and claims that the project has environmental dangers. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington.
During the recent state visit of President William Ruto and First Lady Rachel Ruto of Kenya, the United States and Kenya announced new initiatives and public diplomacy programs to elevate culture as a diplomatic platform that will bring people together, preserve cultural heritage, and strengthen the economies of their two countries. A State Department statement says the department's Ambassador's Fund for Cultural Preservation will continue the United States' long-term investments across Africa to preserve and protect cultural heritage and to boost tourism. Jurors are deliberating in a criminal case against U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump. He is charged with falsifying financial records to hide a payment to an adult film star to influence the outcome of the 2016 election. Campaigning for this year's election continue outside the New York courthouse. Viewers correspondent Cass Stern has the story.
For most of the last 6 weeks, Donald Trump has complained that the charges against him are political.
There's never been anything like this in the history of our country. It's a scam. It's election interference at a level that's never taken place before.
President Joe Biden's campaign has largely refrained from commenting on its opponent's trial until this week, and a Biden campaign appearance by actor Robert De Niro outside the courthouse.
When Trump ran in 2016, it was like a joke. This buffoon running for president. No, never could happen. We'd forgotten the lessons of history that showed us other clowns who weren't taken seriously until they became vicious dictators. With Trump, we have a second chance, and no one is laughing now.
Trump advisor Jason Miller says that shows Trump was right all along.
So the Biden folks have finally done it. After months of saying the politics had nothing to do with this trial, they showed up and made a campaign event out of a Lower Manhattan trial day for President Trump.
From midnight tweets to drinking bleach to tear gas.
De Niro narrates a new commercial from the Biden campaign that it says highlights Trump's, quote, increasingly unhinged and dangerous quest for power since he lost the 2020 election.
Now he's running again, this time threatening to be a dictator, to terminate the Constitution.
If I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Trump wants revenge, and he'll stop at nothing to get it.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
The Trump campaign says Biden is trying to distract voters from his own failings. Spokeswoman Caroline Levitt.
Because Joe Biden is weak, he's pathetic, he's a threat to democracy, not only with this weaponization of our justice system, but with his wide-open border invasion that is allowing a mass invasion of illegal people into this country. Terrorists, criminals, our economy is in shambles, we are heading towards World War III. Those are the issues real Americans care about.
A PBS NewsHour NPR Marist poll says a majority of American voters are not following the trial. The jury's deciding whether to acquit Trump as the first U.S. president to stand criminal trial or make him a convicted felon running for president. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
And that's it for this Thursday, May 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton, Washington, saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do.
Hey there, it's Shauna Renee, also known as the Lady DJ, inviting you to join me every Thursday at 10 and 2200 UTC for today's hit countdown. Each week, I count down the top 20 songs in pop music according to Billboard and Rolling Stone magazines, but more importantly, according to you, the VOA listeners. Again, that's Thursdays at 10 and 2200 UTC.